Good evening. We're going to call taxes back to order. We're going to come out of recess here, and I want to just take a minute to let the nonpartisan staff get sort of situated with their stuff. I do want to remind members and the public and the lobbying community that relies so heavily on nonpartisan staff to provide good data so everyone can make an informed decision, that the nonpartisan staff have done in the last day what they normally do in a week at the end of session. And it's been a stressful process, and we really owe them, all of us, no matter where we stand on these issues, for all the work they are trying to do to get information to everybody to understand what's in this bill. So we do want to preliminarily say that the runs that were put online originally are incorrect, and that's what happens when there's things happening quickly. The 2011 run has now been revised, updated, is correct, and is posted online. So for the public who's looking for this, the 2011 is right. The 2010 is inaccurate and will remain inaccurate tonight. Ms. Dalton is going to tell us why that is and what they still need to make sure that it's accurate, and tomorrow the accurate run will be placed online. So for folks who vote by runs and who want to see every piece of that, that's all going to be there. But, it's a bigger philosophical discussion, I think, that we're going to have here. I want to go ahead and move House File 2077, so it's before us, and add the technical amendment. And I will move the H2077DE3 amendment. And that's to get the bill in the order we want it. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Do we need to move this too? And then the technical is the... Okay. It's still being passed out. And Ms. Dalton gave this to me earlier today. And this is technical. And I'm going to go ahead then and move the H2077A2 amendment to get the bill in the order we'd like it. Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. So now it's before us. And members, I think what we want to start with is the House summary. Okay, so if Ms. Dalton and Mr. Hines can start us with that, and then we really want to kind of absorb all the information here. We will take public testimony. We're going to try to get through this all tonight, and we want to limit public testimony so that everyone's just not sort of repeating. We know cities and counties want to talk to us, but we don't want to hear the same thing over and over and over and over and over. We want to try to get everyone through here and get the vote, if possible, tonight. We'll see how that goes, and be on our way. So with that, Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. I'm hoping that the bill summary is correct. It was written rather quickly. But if there are any errors, we'll try to find them and correct them before Ways and Means tomorrow. Section 1 of the bill, just an overview. What the House File 2077 does is it makes permanent cuts of $105 million a year in city, county, and town aid and credits. The 2010 reductions are supplemental reductions in this bill are to cities and counties and their percent of each jurisdiction's levy plus aid. And then beginning in 2011, the annual appropriations for LGA and county program aid are permanently reduced by $37.4 million. And market value credit reimbursements are permanently reduced by an amount equal to the total K-2010 market value credit reimbursement cuts that were in the governor's unallotments in January. And those reimbursement cuts affect counties, cities, and townships, and they total $30.2 million. The other thing that this bill does is it makes a complementary adjustment to the paid 2011 special levy authority. Levy limits are in effect for under current law through paid 2011. The law as it reads right now allows 100% levy back of any unallotments in 2010 and any cuts in 2011. What this will do is it will also allow any legislative 2010 cuts to also be levied back in 2011. So Section one is the section that makes permanent the annual reduction in each jurisdiction's market value credits equal to their loss in market value credit under the governor's January 2010 unallotment. Section two is the change to the special levies to allow the extra, the supplemental 2010 aid and credit cuts that are in this bill to be levied back in paid 2011. Section three relates to how you calculate the maximum cut in 2011 or the minimum cut in 2011 for 2000 for city aids. There needed to be some adjustment in how you do that. Otherwise, what happens is you can actually have some cities who get more money than they would get under current law, and it has to do with the fact that there's we kind of do these very weird adjustments to small city aid and some jobs credit aid. Section 4 is what actually provides the supplemental pay 2010 aid and credit reductions to cities and counties. The city's reduction is 3.4% of of the city's not adjusted net tax capacity, but it's pay 2010 levy plus aid. That would be one correction needed on the summary. With a maximum loss of $28 per capita. And then for counties, it's a 1.82767% cut of their pay 2010 levy plus aid. And that's using the same basis that the governor used for making his cuts, just different percentages. The other thing that differs from the governor is the cuts are made not first from city LGA and county program aid, but they are made first from market value credit reimbursements and then as needed from LGA and county program aid. Section 5 has the permanent reduction to the city LGA appropriation. It's being reduced from $558 million to $520.7 million beginning with pay 2011. And Section 6 reduces the county program aid appropriation permanently from $241 million to $204 million beginning with pay 2011. That reduction is divided evenly between the two parts of county program aid, county need aid and county tax base equalization aid. And then Section 7 repeals the pay 2011 increase in LGA and county program aid that exists in current law. And that's the summary.
Okay. Thank you. What would you like to walk through next for us?
Madam Chair, I think the next thing we would like to walk through is the sheets that are the 8.5 by 11. They're horizontal, and they have not as many numbers on it as the other sheets in your packet. A single sheet at the top it says comparison of state aid and credit reductions. There's one for calendar year 2010 and one that's for like the calendar year 2011 and 2012. I would start with the 2010. Is everybody
I should identify myself for the record, Steve Hines from House Research. This sheet, then the leftmost column now is showing the 2010 unallotment, and it shows it broken down between counties, cities, and towns, so by jurisdiction and by which program the cut is made to, whether it's the state aid program, LGA or county program aid, or the market value credit program. You can see the total there is basically $200 million, just slightly less because part of the reduction is based on the market value credit amounts, which the estimate has changed a little since January 10 of how much there is. But that's basically the $200 million cut that the governor announced in January of this year, affecting 2010 aids. The middle columns now, just to contrast this proposal, the House File 277, show the governor's proposal and its reduction, and his reductions on the same basis. You can just at a quick glance see the total for the governor's proposal is basically $250 million, if you can see that. In the middle column, right in the middle, it's combination of the county, city, and town effect, and the between the state aids and the market value credit. just jumping quickly maybe over then to the right-hand column, which is then relates to this bill. And this shows a reduction for pay 2010 of $105 million between all the jurisdictions and the various programs. Now, the next thing to note about is that the split between the counties and cities, the top two lines on that page of data, show exactly the same amount, $52,500,000 to counties and $52,500,000 to cities, which gets you to the $105 million total. And this cut, as Ms. Dalton said, was made as a percentage of levy plus aid for counties and cities, in each case, whatever percentage was necessary to get to that $52.5 million. A little difference from how we've done it in the past is that in the past, we always took it first from local government aid or county program aid, and then if there was any that couldn't be gotten from those programs, let the extra amount come to be a reduction in the market value credit reimbursement. Under this bill, we reversed that process, and now the amount is first taken from the market value credit reimbursement, and then if there's not enough there, then you go over into the local government aid or county program aid. Because of doing it this way, only 97 million of the 105 is coming out of market value credit, and 8 million is coming out of LG or county program aid. However, distributionally, it doesn't really matter which one you take it from first. It's going to the same cities. It's done in the same way levy plus aid cut that we've done most of the cuts of the last few years when we've had to make cuts. The bottom of the page then shows the amounts of money of payments that are still in place after the reductions. So under the 2077, it would reflect both the cut from the unallotment and from this bill, and under the governor's, of course, would also reflect both impacts. Then, if I can go ahead and go to the next page, is the same kind of information for 2011. 2012 is basically the same as 2011, so I won't even really talk about 2012. But for 2011 now, the governor's proposal is basically to carry forward the unallotments at $200 million and additionally carry forward the 2010 cuts that he proposed at $250 million for a total of $450 million reduction overall in aids and credits for 2011. House File 2077 does not bring forward the unallotments. It does $105 million of cuts in 2011, and they are split this time. The if you look at the market value credit column under the House File 2077 reductions, those are the same amounts, the market value credit cuts, that were from the unallotment on the previous page. So that the market value credit that came from the governor's unallotment is continued into the next year, a total there of $30 million of market value credit reductions. The rest of the 105 was split evenly between county and city aid at $37.4 million each, through a reduction in the program amounts. So the appropriations for county program aid and LG were each reduced by $37.4 million, getting us that $74.8 for the total aid reduction to go with the $30 million market value credit for $105 total. Like I said, 2012 is really the same thing as 2011. There might be that some of the market value credit numbers are a little changed, but just because the growth in property values changes those a little. And then again, the bottom of the page shows the residual amounts of aids and credits under the proposal and under the governor's proposal. So then I think the next thing to go to...
And we have some questions, but I think it...
Now is a good time.
Okay, Representative Coles, and we do want to get through all their presentation, though, before we start getting too far afield here. Representative Coles.
Well, Madam Chair, I hope this is not too far afield. I think I know the answer to this question, but can you talk through your thinking behind taking the market value credit first and then doing the remainder on LGA, which is sort of the reverse of what the governor proposed? I think I know the answer to that, but can you help me understand your thinking as to why you chose that approach?
Sure, I think we want to get through their presentation, but I'll tell you, The net effect in 2010 is there's no property tax increase for anyone in Minnesota as a result of this bill in 2010. So the way you order it really doesn't matter because the levies have been set for 2010. So the cities now and the counties have to absorb that. So you can do market value credit first or an aid first, but either way, it's not going to affect any homeowners in Minnesota in 2010. And that was by design. The converse in 2011 is to actually try to go into and then sort of break out for the future, what are we going to do about market value homestead credit? And as you know, the wealthiest communities have had their market value homestead credit removed already for a number of years due to unallotments. And so the 2011 position allows us as the majority to demonstrate that we want to have that to continue to be the case so that we can first go where folks are best off and last go to where people are most vulnerable. And so that's by design to demonstrate our priorities within the property tax relief system. Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, the next then papers we'd like to direct your attention to are the ones that are the legal sized horizontal tables. Again, two pages worth, one for 2010 and one for 2011. There's not much of a header at the top of the page, but over in the far left, you'll see on the one of them, it says 2010 aid and credit reductions, and the other says 2011. Again, we'll start with the 2010 sheet. And this is, now in this format, we've broken the state into 16 regions, which pretty well correspond to the ones we use in the property tax model that some of you are used to seeing. We made a few, there's also a map in your folder somewhere that just sort of shows which counties got assigned to which regions in case you have questions about where a particular county might lie, but they're pretty standard designations, I would say. And the first two columns then on the left are just some background information which show the percentage of the state's population that's in each region. And you notice they're grouped by Greater Minnesota first and then Metro second. They're all county groupings except for at the very bottom we do have Minneapolis and St. Paul broken out separately from the suburban parts of Hennepin and Ramsey County. Again, as long-standing tradition in the property tax model to try to break out those large cities separately. So the first column is the percentage of the state's population that the region is. And the second column is the percentage of the state's ANTC, the adjusted net tax capacity, which is the tax base of the state equalized on an equalized basis. The third column then shows the total amount of county, city, and town base aid. So county program aid, local government aid, and market value homestead credit and ag credit in each of those regions and how that breaks down on a statewide basis by the regions, I should say. And that's the total is almost $1 billion. $994 million is the number you can see there at the top on the state totals. The next two columns relate to the unallotment, the $200 million unallotment for 2010. And again, that's remember coming from cities, counties, and towns. The $200 million, again, how that breaks down is the percentage of the state's population, or as a percentage of the state, the total. Then the next three columns relate to the House File 2077, the bill before you tonight. The one labeled proposed city aid and credit cuts is the amount that's coming from city LGA or market value credit under this proposal. At the $52.5 million you see at the top of the page. The next column is the county program aid, $52.5 million, but that's shown how the county is apportioned. And on these county aids, on these next two pages, we do break out the Minneapolis and St. Paul. We show an amount for Minneapolis and St. Paul under the county program aid by breaking it out by population within the counties, just to kind of get it on a basis so you can compare. We are trying to give you a basis to compare what's going on with the counties and cities together and towns. The next column is simply the total of those two, the $105 million total. And the percentage of that is of the state in the next column. And then finally, the last two columns, the second to the last, is then showing that total amount for the region as a per capita amount. And you can see that the average in the state is $20 per capita. The range is it's like the low of $9 to a high of 39 on a per capita basis. Now, this is strictly the cut in this bill. This does not include the unallotment in that figure. And then the last column is the percentage that the aid and credit cut is as a percentage of the tax base, so that second column we related to, which is kind of based on the idea of if it was all to be replaced with a levy, what would the tax rate necessary to levy that back be if it was all to be replaced. Then the next sheet is the same type of information but for 2011 and really would apply to years thereafter as well. The columns are pretty similarly designated. The total base amount is a little bit higher in 2011 than 2010, and that's just some of the programs had some natural increases in them due to, I think, the market value credit goes up a little, but it's basically the same concept and the same idea. There's no unallotment, of course, for 2011, so we don't have that column on this page. And then the effects of this bill are shown in three pieces. The column that's the proposed local government aid reduction, the proposed city and town market value credit cut, and the proposed county program aid reduction. And you notice that the LGA and the county program aid are the same number, $37,413,000. The total, again, of the three effects there is the $105 million. Shown again as a percentage of state, the total as a percentage of the state per capita amounts and as a percentage of tax base. And again, these, and, you know, we did not update the tax base for 2011, so it's really just using the same tax base. Again, we don't have 2011 numbers there, but just to give an idea. So this is our attempt at putting it on a regional basis for you to kind of analyze what's going on. And
Ms. Dalton, I suppose the runs.
So now we get to everyone's favorite, which is the city by city runs. You have both a 2010 city cuts under the governor's proposal and under House File 2077, and then a 2011. Let's talk about the 2010 first. The one thing I want to point out, It came to our attention very late that particularly if you are in a high income city, either in for instance on page if you go to page 2 of this printout.
So members, we're looking at the large run, 2010 in the corner, page 2.
You could. Let's take a look at
or 3.
I'm trying to find one. Oh, well, we'll just start with Coon Rapids. The governor's supplemental cut in 2010 for the city of Coon Rapids looks smaller than the cut for under House File 2077. I would like to tell you, actually, it is the same. And the reason that this is different is that the governor's cuts, I actually made the run back in around February 20th, and we did not have final market value credit estimates. So this was based on some preliminary estimates. So the amount of market value credit used in calculating these cuts were a little different. And the bottom line is, for these cities, they're all losing all their market value credit. It's just that I had a different base for these, and I didn't have time to rerun the governor's cuts using the updated market value credit estimates. So I am very sorry that's the error we found in this run, and it will be corrected before tomorrow.
Ms. Dalton,
but to correct it yourself, if you're looking at the governor's supplemental cut in 3 and it's essentially looking like all the, it's a fairly small number, it looks like they're just taking market value credit. You can just put in what's in column four, that, and that should be correct, because those are really just cities where we are taking all of their market value credit.
So, is Ms. Dalton, can I just ask to be clear on this, because this is the run now that we're not going to get the right exact numbers till tomorrow, because it was done on estimated market value data and not the final data. And so with the final data, is this a correct statement? When we get that final run, there will be no city in the state that has one of these two statements true about it. This should be true about all of them, one or the other. Either they have the same cut that the governor has provided, or they do better under the bill. But no one would do worse.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is correct, because they are using the same base for making the cuts, and the House File 2077 is making a smaller percentage cut off those bases. Everyone will have a smaller cut or at most the same cut, and the only time you would have the same cut as the governor is if you're losing everything and we just can't take the whole cut.
Does that make sense to everybody? Everyone? Particularly, I'm thinking the folks in the audience, does everyone understand that? When the numbers come in, there won't be anybody worse off. Okay, so we just want to make sure. It was the keen eyes of Representative Dietrich looking through her district that said, huh? And so the error was discovered. So we appreciate that and that new information. So it will be corrected. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, just to take you through the printout for 2010, the 2010 is showing the certified LGA and the last best estimate of market value credits for 2010 prior to any cuts. Column 2 shows the unallotments that occurred in January. Column 3, as I said, is the preliminary governor's supplemental cuts with my error in market value credits. Column 4 are the total credit and aid cuts under this proposal for 2010. And then columns 5 and 6 are just showing the governor's supplemental cut on a per capita basis compared to the House File 2077 cuts on a per capita basis.
Okay. Is there more?
Well, take it.
County.
Do you want to do county for 2010? Or do you want me to do
11, I guess.
All right, we'll do city 2011, and then Steve will take you through the county runs.
Members, on 2011, again, we're on the thick run. You have one in your packet that was wrong. You want to look for the one that was just handed out that after the title line here, it says updated behind it, after the big text, the one that says updated for 2011. Okay? Ms. Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I would just like to say there was no change in the actual numbers that were cut. It was just that my column 7 had a calculation error in the original run, and so I had to make a change to the how that column 7 was calculated. To take you through the columns, column 1 is just estimated LGA in 2011 under current law. Column 2 is the estimated 2000 LGA under this bill. This is not the cut. This is how much they will actually get in LGA. Column 3 is the market value credit that will occur in 2011 under this bill. And then column 4 is the combined LGA cut plus market value credit cut in 2011 under this bill. We don't show a estimated 2011 market value credit because it's a long time before that thing's actually going to be calculated. Then if you move on to column 5, this would be the governor's LGA under the governor's supplemental proposal in 2011. Column 6 is the governor's market value credit under his supplemental proposal. And then column 7 is the total governor's cuts in 2011 under his supplemental proposal. So if you want to compare the cuts between this bill and the governor's proposal, you want to compare columns 4 and column 7.
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, then if I'll, we'll go to the, I think our last set of papers for you to look at are the ones that are kind of have smaller print, they're vertical, and they have the county runs. Again, there's one for 2010 and 2011, and they're just one side front and back with the county listing on them. So the 2010 numbers just show the first column is the population, the second column is the unallotment, the governor's unallotment that they told her is 67 million, as you can see at the top of the page. The middle three, the next three columns then relate to the governor's supplemental cuts. Cuts an additional 174 million out of county program aid, 17 million plus out of market value credit, for a total of about 192 million. Total, and you can see the split between the counties and the metro non-metro, and then the columns on the right relate to the cuts under this bill. The first column, only one county had any cut in its county program aid. The rest of it all came from market value credit, and the total there was the 52.5 million that we've discussed earlier. Then the 2011 sheet, similar format. This one now, there's no unallotment, but it shows the baseline county program aid and the estimated market value credit for 2010. So I'm kind of assuming that, implying that's kind of the same as the 2011 estimate, but we don't really have a new estimate yet there. The governor's reductions are the same for 2011 as for 2010. And the House File 2077 is a 37.4 million reduction. Only county program aid was affected in this bill. There's no market value credit cut to counties in under this bill for 2011 and thereafter.
Okay, I think that's all the handouts. And again, I want to thank you both so very much for all your work to assemble all this information today, and more, of course, will be coming and put online as soon as it's available tomorrow morning. So with that, we can do questions, but we want to get through public testimony and then have the debate. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo your thanks to both Mr. Hines and Ms. Dalton for coming to talk with the Republican members during the break and allowing us the opportunity to kind of walk through the spreadsheets so that we have better understanding. So I just wanted to say a public thanks from our side as well. Thanks.
So if we can go to public testimony, we come on up, unless you have absolutely nothing to say. Mr. Carlson, please. We do want to try to limit it, just due to the time, but we don't want to cut anybody off. We just want to make sure people say new things.
And Madam Chair, if I do a good job, I think most of the other city lobbyists will not testify. So I'll do my best here to try to.
Oh, big pressure there, Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to provide you with some observations. We haven't had a great opportunity to digest all of the components of the bill yet, but I think we understand it fairly well. And I just want to say also at the outset that the city groups have all circulated the proposal, and now we have to make sure they realize that the runs may not quite be accurate. But if we hear any information back from our cities in the coming days, we'll certainly try to relay those back to the committee or to the chair of the committee as well. The proposal is significantly better as we compare this to the governor's proposed supplemental budget. And as we measure it, the 2010 cuts are about 42% of what the governor proposed in FY 12-13, calendar year 11 and 12. The cuts are about 26% of the governor's proposal, if I'm not mistaken. That said, let me just reiterate that please remember cities have taken some very severe cuts over the last several years. Now, we started in 2008 with a December unallotment of $66 million. In 2009, we had a $64 million unallotment. In 2010, we had $128 million allotment. This would still be an additional $52.5 million on top of $128 million. We're talking $180 million cut in cities. This is still very serious, and we'd like you to remember that although it may be somewhat better than the governor's proposal, we still think that our cities are suffering and will have to make some very severe budget cuts. Let me just mention one thing about the structure of in the 2010 cuts of going to the market value homestead credit. And Chair Lincheski, you indicated the part of the reason for doing that. I think there's another reason that may actually help our cities and counties, and this is one that may not have been apparent to you. But LGA is paid one half in July, one half in December. Market value homestead credit is paid one half in late October and one half in December. This actually would probably help some cities with cash flow because this cut, as opposed to the governor's unallotment cut, will occur more in the October distribution and the December distribution, giving us about 3 months of cash flow benefit, which I honestly think could help some cities deal with the cash flow challenges that they will be facing under the combined unallotment and this new supplemental budget cut. So please keep that in mind as well, Chair Lincheski. The 2011 and 2012 cuts do not address one issue for those market value homestead credit cities, and I know you all are aware of this. I've testified in the past several years on this issue. Cities will certify a dollar amount of levy to their taxpayers, and because of the structure of these cuts, they will receive something less than what they tell taxpayers they are going to certify. And we'd like to find a way around that. I know we've tried to skin that cat several times in the past. I know those cities that lose the MVHC will certify $100 and they'll get $95 from the taxpayers because the state will not be making that reimbursement payment. We'd still like to try to find a way to skin that cat. Madam Chair, I hope I've covered all the issues that our cities have raised with me. Just please keep in mind that we still are talking some very severe consequences. We do appreciate the fact that you listened to our concerns in our testimony on the governor's supplemental budget. This should be somewhat easier, but yet still severe.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Questions for Mr. Carlson? Okay, thank you. Mr. Carlson, Mr. Matthews, welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Inter-County Association, and we'll try and be brief. With regards to the 2010 cuts in this bill, I do want to express county's gratitude with a large conditional if, and that if is we do not face substantially greater cuts in the Health and Human Services Committee. If all the reduction in our level of cut vis-a-vis the governor is comes back to bite us in the Health and Human Services Committee, this is not going to help us. With saying that, again, you know, if this is truly reflects an overall reduction in the level of cuts, we're certainly grateful for that. I'll remind the committee, just as the cities, we have already taken substantial cuts, $66 million in county program aid, and in the health and human services area, when you add that to that, we're at $93 million. And with the GAMC bill, if that's ultimately enacted by the legislature, that will bring our level of cuts to over $100 million for this calendar year before the additional cuts in this bill. Going on to 2011-2012, again, we're grateful for the cuts, the level of cuts vis-a-vis what the governor has proposed in that next biennium. However, I do want to put one caveat towards that, only if these are realistic cuts. If you establish levels of certification based on these numbers and then you come back in 2011 and say, whoops, we should have cut more, you're not helping us. You're making what is a consistently bad situation a repeat once again, where we get certified one number and then we turn around and get to the start of the calendar year and we find that the state cannot come through with the level of aids that are promised and that our budgets are all off kilter when if more effective numbers had more realistic numbers had been used, we could have certified more appropriate levies and adjusted our budgets accordingly. With that, I'll stop and turn things over to Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Matthews, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe Matthews, the Association of Minnesota Counties. I think Mr. Carlson covered it pretty well. Just one point I'll reiterate again. As he said, we're taking hits in other areas of the budget. One area this committee may be interested in is it's our understanding that there will be about a $2.8 million reduction in PILT through the Environment Committee. And so I know this committee discussed that previously when we looked at the governor's recommendations. I just wanted folks to be aware that that was reduced, but it was done through one of the finance committees.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Appreciate it. Others, public testimony. You know, I don't know if there's anyone else, but I do want to say that there is not a member, I think, of this committee who has not benefited from all the people who are in this room, all the different groups who are here, and I know this is really difficult, no matter who's working on it. So I think all members bipartisanly really understand the difficulty you all have with all the people you represent, and now you're going to be trying to get all the information to all those people. And so we understand you're going to be sort of inundated for a while. And I just want to offer on behalf of, I think the minority would make the same offer. If there is some outlying issue that some standard deviation that's just out that we don't understand, that is really a strange situation, then you hear it from your township or your city or your county or whatever. Please let us know. We're still going to go to Ways and Means and to the floor and then be in the big supplemental cut bill. So we want to hear from folks where something isn't working right, if you have any input for us. So we do understand what you're all up against here, and I don't think anybody here relishes the, you know, going through this process. But is there anyone else who wants to testify on this bill? Okay, if not, thank you. And discussion to the bill. Right, Rep. Some calls.
Well, Madam Chair, I found Mr. Carlson's testimony interesting, and in particular his comment about, you know, certifying numbers and then it not being reality, and we're kind of changing things midstream, and you know, I get that, and I don't disagree with that at all. That does put our local units of government in a really tough place. And I guess one of the concerns that I have, Madam Chair, is not in how you're applying the reductions or where you're applying them, but I do have a concern in that I think we are continuing the, at least a large degree of uncertainty for local units of government by not continuing Governor Plenty's unallotments, not ratifying the unallotments going forward. I understand the concern about the level of those unallotments, and I get that, but as we move forward and look into the next biennium, by not doing that, we are not helping the long-term budget situation. We are creating further uncertainty, I believe, and I suspect that regardless of who's in control of the legislature and who's sitting in the governor's office, that we are once again, as we deal with the state's long-term fiscal problems, going to be back talking about how we're going, what that state and local unit of government fiscal relationship is going to be. And that's a concern for me, Madam Chair. And you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but it has to be said. We don't know what is going to happen with Governor Plenty's unallotments for this biennium. You know, the House majority spent taxpayer money to suggest that what Governor Plenty did was unconstitutional, and if the House majority, if their position prevails, we have a big problem yet to deal with this biennium, and I suspect that we're going to be back here, and cities and counties are going to be looking at additional reductions. I'm not sure how we're going to get to another $2.7 billion in additional revenues or additional reductions without having further discussion around local government aids and credits. And so, Madam Chair, that's really the concern I have. It's not that we're reducing spending. It's not that we're reducing it by $105 million or that's too much or not enough or how it's being done. It's that I don't think we really know what the full picture is yet, and I'm concerned that we are continuing to sort of have a situation of significant uncertainty unless we do more to deal with the long-term long-term budget picture, and I'm not convinced yet that that's happening. So, Madam Chair, that I'll stop now. I don't know that there's really a question there for anybody, but it's just more of a comment that, you know, I think bipartisanly we agree there's huge problems and huge challenges, and I don't suggest that I have all the answers of how we solve them either, but I'm just concerned that this isn't getting us there.
Thank you, Representative Coles. Appreciate that. Representative Brott. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and, you know, we're all in a very difficult situation, but I just really need to respond to one of Representative Cole's comments, you know, only because he's made it now twice. And that is the part about we're spending taxpayer money to defend this lawsuit and et cetera, et cetera. You know, first of all, Representative Coles, we didn't file the lawsuit. It was filed by independent people. That was not my preference, I must tell you. I thought we should have filed the lawsuit because I believe the governor did something way beyond just deciding to make a budget decision. I believe he violated our Constitution, which is, to me, an extremely serious issue that will affect us for generations if we don't deal with it right now. So that's number one. But to keep saying that we're spending taxpayer money, the governor is also spending taxpayer money on the lawsuit. Now, I don't know how much it is, but his counsel is state-paid counsel. He is not outraising private funds to do it. He doesn't, you know, he's not spending his own money to defend the lawsuit. He is also spending state money. So, I mean, it's, you know, $25,000. I mean, I know that's real money, but, you know, we're dealing with budgets, a budget that's billions of dollars, and I just want us to move off of that little kind of what seems to me kind of a just a little dig. You know, this is a really serious issue. Some of us feel that it's a very serious issue. And regardless of the fact that we do understand that if we win, quote unquote, we're not really winning because we do have to make some even tougher decisions. But you know what? That's our job. That is our job. And I think that we come here and this institution is given to us in trust. That's how I feel about it. And we need to return it to the next office holder, the next legislature, at least in as good a shape as we found it. And to me, that means that we have a very important obligation to defend the institution as we see it. And that's what I believe the lawsuit is doing, even though we didn't file it, which is what I wanted to do. So I just want us to, you know, let's talk about the tax issues here, but let's get off the $25,000, you know, because the governor is also spending money on the lawsuit, and this is something that I believe needs to be resolved.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Coles, yes?
Madam Chair, Governor Pawlenty was sued. Whether it was Governor Pawlenty or Lori Swanson or Rebecca Otto or any of our constitutional officers who are sued or any of our commissioners, they absolutely have not only a right, but we should expect that they're going to be defended by the Attorney General's office. The House Democrats chose to spend $25,000 of taxpayer money to file a friend of the court brief. That's fine. You chose to do that. So if you believe that Governor Pawlenty's unallotment decision abused his constitutional power, we can have a lengthy debate about that. The Supreme Court heard over an hour worth of argument on it. Very learned people on both sides of that issue with very different opinions. But if you believe that Governor Pawlenty acted inappropriately, then solve the $2.7 billion problem. This doesn't do it. This doesn't get us there. This doesn't help the people in this room understand what's next. This isn't a cut bill. This is a SNP bill, if we're talking about 2.7 plus a billion. So that's my point, Representative Liebling. And yeah, I do think $25,000 is real money. Yeah, our budget is billions of dollars. But every single dollar that we spend, we absolutely should take seriously. And if you think that Governor Pawlenty was wrong, that you're absolutely entitled to that opinion. I think there are lots of people who agree with you. There's lots of people who disagree with you on very principled reasons. And if you believe that strongly, then let's solve for 3.7, not 1 billion.
Assembly Lee.
Well, thank you. Well, Representative Coles, I mean, clearly we have a very distinct difference of opinion, and that is being played out in the courts. I think that, you know, this is being taken very seriously, and I believe that the court will, in some form find that the governor has overstepped his boundaries here. But, you know, I just also, the idea that we didn't set forward entirely to solve the budget problem in cuts is being messaged by Republicans as saying that we didn't solve the budget. We did have a solution to the budget. It involved also raising some revenue, what I consider a balanced solution. And I still personally believe that we should have a balanced solution. Now, the fact that the governor disagrees with that and he holds a veto pen and he decided to do something that I consider utterly unconstitutional instead of having a serious negotiation, that's, you know, that's the way things played out. But let's not say that we didn't put forward a solution, because we did. It just wasn't the solution that the governor and that the Republicans did choose. But that doesn't mean that we didn't solve for it, and that doesn't mean that if the unallotments are found to be unconstitutional that we won't solve for it. So that's all I'm going to say about it. We could go on with this for a long time. Madam Chair, thank you for your indulgence.
I'm broad.
Well, I'll let those two lawyers hash that out. But I guess I do agree a little bit. I agree with Representative Coles on a number of things. But on this one, you know, if it's the job of the legislature and you're going to argue it's the job of the legislature, we don't need to wait to solve the problem. And if Representative Liebling, if you want to raise taxes, you know, let's see what you have on the table so that Minnesotans can actually see the proposal that you're planning. Is it beer taxes that we heard in Health and Human Services, which increased beer taxes by 1,400% on beer drinkers in the state? Is it cigarette taxes? Is it income taxes? Is it sales taxes? Let's just see what it is. But, Madam Chair, back to the bill itself. I appreciate it's a tough job, and you are ready with negotiating with Senator Bach. That's a yeoman's work, and so I congratulate you for that difficult challenge in and of itself. But I think when we focus on just this 105, we miss the point of the bigger picture. And being a big picture person, you know, we have to solve the budget deficit. You have a target to meet, and that's the bill that we have before us. But it just seems to me that if we just solve a deficit without an eye toward reforming our system to actually ensure that we have a greater opportunity for prosperity and economic growth, we're not getting to where we need to go. If we want to create jobs, it's not about putting a bonding bill forward. It's about creating an economy in which businesses can actually thrive. And we're not doing that with this bill. And I'm not seeing that there's a lot of efforts moving in that direction. And that, to me, is one of the biggest missed opportunities that we're going to see this session unless we start moving in that direction. You know, the other thing is mandates. You know, we all talk a great game about mandates, but there's very little mandate relief that happens. You know, there was a bill the other day that a county just wanted that little opportunity to have a four-day work week where they could do 4 10s, keep 40 hours, but 4 10s. And the committee voted it down and said no. Even though the county could have saved $50,000, they said, oh, $50,000, that's not much. But every dollar adds up. Every dollar counts for these small counties and for the large counties. And so if we're going to talk a good game on mandate relief, we ought to deliver on that mandate relief. And we shouldn't close the door on counties who want that flexibility for how they actually operate and deliver services. Why does a county have their doors open from 8 to 5 when nobody can get there? Why shouldn't a county be able to change how they deliver services to the people that they represent? We shouldn't get in the way of that, and too often we do, and I don't see those reforms coming forward along with the dollars that we're talking about today. Other post-employment benefits, we had that conversation as well. If we want to really stop tying the hands of counties and bankrupting them into our future, if we want to stop tying the hands of school districts, which the state auditor came and said that our liability for our school districts equals about $13,000 per student, $13,000 per student, we're tying the hands of our school districts. And we're forcing them into a liability which is equal to what we give our school districts for the kids, for goodness sakes. So, I mean, if we want to really start helping our local governments to be able to use the dollars, the limited dollars that they get, and we're pulling those dollars back, we need to give them greater flexibility. And I wish that flexibility was part of this discussion, because I think the discussion is more than just about money. I think the discussion is about how we position the relationship between the state and the local governments. It's about how we position not just a fiscal relationship, but a relationship related to what we allow them to do and what we don't allow them to do. And I wish that we would see some mandate relief in this bill. And so I guess, Madam Chair, I appreciate the difficult job that we have before us. I don't think that this actually, I think it moves us in the direction, but it doesn't actually get us to the place where we can go out to the people of this state and say, you know what, we didn't just solve that budget deficit, but we actually positioned our state to succeed going forward. And that's my greatest disappointment at this point. And my hope is that we'll be able to bring forward other legislation, such as the governor's tax bill, which actually will allow Minnesota businesses to put money back on the ground so that they can get those doors back open, get the jobs going, not because necessarily of government spending, but because they know how to get the money to work. And I hope that we can start moving in that direction alongside of making the necessary reductions that I know we need to make in this bill, but that we need to make beyond that to make sure that we're setting our state on a course toward prosperity in the future. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Braun. Others? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago, Representative Broad and I had the pleasure of being on a panel together at the High Tech Association, and she gave much the same speech there that she just did here. And I'm intrigued, because as I thought about it, it's the vacuum in the debate. That what's the problem with this bill is that there isn't enough reform, and we're not stepping forward, and we're not making Minnesota more competitive. And voters, please forget that we were in charge for 8 years. From 1998 to 2006, the now minority was the majority. And for four of those years, they had a very friendly independence governor. And for four of those years, they had their former majority leader in the governor's office. And for all of that time, Minnesota's economy declined. Where we used to lead the nation in job creation, under the GOP leadership, we declined. We began to lag the nation in job creation. Where we used to lag the nation in unemployment, we started to track the nation in unemployment. We've experimented with the minority's ideology, and Minnesota has demonstrably become the worse for it. And for the minority to come forward now and say, oh, well, we need to do all of these things. Why didn't you do them when you were in charge? You had the opportunity. You had a clear shot. And instead, you've held to an ideology that isn't embedded in this bill, but certainly has damaged the economy of the state, the business opportunities, the business people, and more importantly, or as importantly, the working families who work hard and have some of the greatest productivity in the nation, if not the world, and yet have seen now 5 quarters of declining wages in Minnesota. That's the inheritance that they've gotten from Governor Pawlenty and the dominant ideology. Thank God we're not doing what the minority has wanted in this bill, because what the minority wants has already done enough damage to the business community, the economy, and working families. I don't understand why all the evidence before us doesn't lead people to be willing to look at the outcome and instead be willing to try ways that are more balanced, more responsible, and more in tune with, you know, a recognition that the experiment has failed.
Like Obama.
Okay, so Madam Representative Chair. Poonen.
Madam Chair, I just
did you
just a quick back and forth.
Okay, well, I don't think Representative Dabney was calling anyone out, but we've got five on the list. We're going to let Representative Broad jump in, but there's five on the list.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And Representative Dabney was talking about a conversation that we had at an event for the High Tech Association, which, by the way, Representative Dabney, was a great event. And we were talking about the importance of the angel investment credit. But Representative Dabney, I don't know that the memory, your memory and my memory are equal. You know, we did pass single sales and start moving in the right direction toward making Minnesota more competitive. We did pass many health and human service reforms, very similar actually to what President Clinton did back in the 90s. We put those reforms here in place here in Minnesota to get people back to work, to get them back on their feet. They've been rolled back since we have moved into the minority. So we did pass the reforms that actually moved us into the direction or toward more charter school movement and more choice here in Minnesota. We did pass all sorts of things, whether it was health and human services or whether it was tax reform, that moved us in the direction that was a good direction. But there are some things that we have to do related to spending. We spent too much, Representative Dabney, on the federal level and on the state level. We have outspent our inflation for years and years and years. And my dad told me when I was young, you can't spend more than you have. It's really that simple. And we've been doing that for far too long. We've been making promises to the people of Minnesota because we could tell them we're going to fund it in the out years. We're going to put it in next year's budget. We don't have to account for it today, but we're going to get that program in place and we're going to fund it. But nobody knows where the money's coming from. We can't make promises like that that we can't keep. And yet that's what we've been doing year after year after year. So, Representative Dabney, I don't think this, quote, experiment has failed. I don't know that it's an experiment. Who is actually in office is an expression of the positions of the people of the state. I don't think it's an experiment. I don't think people are experimenting with anything. I think people expect us to solve the tough, difficult challenges that we have. And we all have different philosophies as to how we actually get there. But you know what? When we were in the majority, you know what? We probably needed to cut spending more so that we could actually get ourselves moving in the right direction. But we passed all sorts of good reforms, big reforms, that has since been rolled back and moved in the wrong direction. And so, Representative Dabney, I hope that we can work together to start reforming things in a sustainable way, not just in a way that solves a budget deficit or not just in a way that protects a program, because everything that we do is bigger than a budget deficit and it's bigger than a program. It's about how we serve the people of the state and provide value for the taxes that they're paying, and that sense of value is what's missing in this discussion.
Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, in the 8 years I've been here, it seems that aids and credits have been a target for cuts and unallotments right along through those 8 years. It's pretty common that those things get hit when it comes to having to make the cuts. And I understand now that we have a pretty serious budget deficit, and so I'm going to vote for this bill and for these cuts again. I'm glad they're not as deep as what the governor has in his supplemental budget. But, Madam Chair, you know, over the last few weeks, you've been meeting with the fiscal chairs, the speaker, the Senator Bach over in the Senate. I was wondering if you had some kind of sense, and I know I'm asking you to shine up your crystal ball, but some kind of sense of if we're going to be looking at more cuts to aids and credits in the next few weeks, even in just in the short term. And, you know, if there is no answer to that, there isn't. But if you have a sense of that, I would like to know if you could share that with the committee.
Sure. Thank you for that question, Representative Coonan. The hope is no, that there would not be any more in this legislative session. I think it's fair I think Senator Folger-Miller and Speaker Kelleher would be okay with me saying this. Senator Bach and I asked for that commitment in a meeting, that this will be it for aids and credits for this legislative session. Wisely, I think both of them said that's our intention, but we can't for sure commit to that because of things like unallotment. So with things like unallotment, potentially, if we have to deal with the unallotments being overturned, we might have to go down another road. Of course, there is no crystal ball, but we had the strong sense, without a complete promise, that this would be the attempt for this, would be it for this year for dealing with the size of cuts to aids and credits for this legislative session. So, you know, I can only speak for me and for Senator Bach. I will just say that one of the frustrations that we both had, we talked to the press together today, is when people have to do priority budgeting and say these are certain things no one wants to cut, then other things get cut a little more. And that's kind of what we're looking at. And folks are all in a caucus here. All legislators are in either the minority or majority caucus in either body, and people have to make decisions as groups, and they have to compromise. And so this caucus has attempted with a variety of people to compromise and to put a number at 105 to this committee. And it's been really difficult for some members in this, in my majority, to make that 105, and for others not at all. But yet we have to make a decision together, and that's what the targeting process does, is bring us to that point. We are hoping that 105 is the number for 2010 and 210 for the tails for this year. But it's not 100% guaranteed, but that is our objective here. It would be, this is it for the cuts for this year. On allotment, of course, is hanging out there. Representative Poonen.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that's a pretty good answer. I know that there are some unknowns ahead of us yet, but that at least gives us a sense of where things are headed. So appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And you know, this is tough stuff for everyone involved. I remember back in 2001 when we had a surplus. That's a lot of fun. We were able to add money to LGA. We were able to lower property taxes, and we gave a rebate check back. Now, that probably wasn't the best policy, but it sure was fun at the time to do that. These are more difficult times, needless to say, and you know, this bill is a good first step in balancing the budget, and that's one of the things we need to do. And overall, this first phase will cut the deficit by about $320 million. And as Chair Lincheski said, in just taxes alone, it's going to make a smaller government of $210 million in the next 2 years. What the total will bring, we don't know. And I think that's why it's good to take this in steps, because we don't know for sure what the federal government might do this year. So if we were to look at all $1 billion right now, we might be overextending versus whatever. So I think this is a good first step, and the fact of the matter is this is smaller government. It's cutting things, and no one enjoys that. But I think what this plan does, and I know Representative Coles was wondering why we didn't just take the governor's unallotment numbers, but I think two main things we wanted to do with this, I mean, on continue the unallotment on the aids and credits. But I think what we tried to do with this bill was, number one, protect the property taxpayer in terms of preventing steep high property taxes or decreased services. And the second thing we tried to do, and I think when you look at this sheet right here, thanks to staff in really working these numbers, if you look geographically, it's very balanced. We wanted to make sure that every area of the state had about the same burden. And I think we met those goals. I mean, people can talk about should we cut more or less. You know, at this time, we think this is what we need to do. But when you look at the property tax numbers, and you've heard me state this before, but I was just going back and looking from 2002, when it was after the 2001 year, and we had about a $500 million property tax drop. And then since 2002, it's gone up. But I looked at income tax and sales tax. Now, granted, income and sales have been down the last couple of years, but in that, from 2002 to 2010, property taxes have gone up 72%. Income tax during that same period has gone up 22% revenues, and sales tax has actually dropped 6%. And so what we've done is, especially through all the cuts and the unallotments, is we focus so much on aids and credits that have forced up property taxes. And so what we tried to do here, and why we didn't just extend the governor's cuts is we're trying to say, hey, enough is enough. We just put too much on property taxpayers. We need to provide some relief here. And I think we did that. So, I think this is a fair approach. It's a balanced approach. It helps relieve a heavy burden on property taxpayers. And at the same time, the burden went evenly across the state. And just one final word, I agree with Representative Broad. I mean, we need to do redesign. However, you know, redesign doesn't happen overnight. And right now, in fact, we just met again today, Representative Wofler, Representative Erdahl, Representative McFarland, myself, met, and we've also had meetings with the Senate and with folks involved. But we've identified about six areas of redesign that we're going to work on over the interim and get ideas and so forth and really vet those out on how we can produce better value at a better price. And that's going to be crucial as we look into the future on all these things. So, it's not something you do overnight, and it's something we're working on. But, members, this is tough. And I know on both sides of the aisle, no one likes to do this type of stuff. But I think this is a good, prudent step in balancing the budget and trying to take some of the burden off property taxpayers.
Thank you, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, actually, believe it or not, I do have a question on the bill. Just to confirm, not having much history with aids and credits, the provisions in the bill that put us back up to $204 million in 2011 and in perpetuity on the county aid side, and up to $521 million approximately for the cities in 2011 and 2012 going forward. My read of the bill, at least the language that's here, is that that is essentially where we've been at historically, so that conceptually what we've done is in 2010 under this bill taken a bit of a hit, but then at least on the aid side kind of dialed back up to what our historical levels are, or at least very close to those. Could staff, or maybe even you yourself, just confirm that I'm reading this accurately?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, actually you aren't, and it's because some of the increases that have occurred over time actually occur in the section that is repealed in Section 7. There were all the increases that were built in a separate section, and that section is being repealed. So the number was not actually 526 last year, or this year, it was actually about 538 this year, and it was anticipated to be 556. Now, LGA has fluctuated a lot over time, and I can give you a history of it. I don't have one here right now, but it's just that that number that's in Section 5 and that number in Section, the numbers in Section 6 that are deleted are actually a constant number that was increased in a different part of the bill.
Quick follow-up, if I could. And so the number would have been 556 approximately, and now it's 521.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, that's correct.
And if I could, Madam Chair, just another follow-up then on the county side, as compared to the 204, what would that have been? Absent that similar repeal?
You might as well just do market value credit.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, that would have been $241 million.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Market value credit is permanent.
Madam Chair, I'm going to let...
Madam Chair, the county market value credit number is about $129 million. We don't know the market value credit for cities right now.
Thank you, Mr. I just wanted to get in the ballpark as to where we were at. And maybe just a comment with that information. In principle, I actually like the direction we're heading. One of the things that surprised me when I came down to the legislature was the interconnectedness between what we're doing here at the state and what happens in local units of government. And I don't think the taxpayers really in general understand that interconnectedness and why they're looking to me as though I, at the state level, am somehow responsible for their property tax increases. I've never totally understood, and frankly, don't think that's the way it should be going forward. And I like the fact that as we start to reduce these aids and credits, local units of government will be much more transparently accountable to their taxpayers for what's going on locally. And I appreciate that the governor started us on this path, and I'd like to see us, frankly, stay on a more aggressive path. I'm actually going to vote against the bill tonight because I don't think we're being as aggressive as we should be. And while in these out years there's some dialing back of the previous projections on county and city aids, I mean, it's maybe 10 or 15%, I guess, if I'm doing some rough math here. So we're basically dialing back up in these out years under this bill. We don't perpetuate the unallotments, and I think the governor's more aggressive posture is the right one. And we can talk about how property taxes went up 70%. I'm guessing that if you do the lines on property taxes and actually market values of homes, you'd probably see almost a direct correlation. So I'm not sure that those property tax increases are related to state policy, but more so the artificial escalation in property values based on what was happening in the residential real estate market. And you know, the reality is local governments rode the wave. I'm not sure that we had the fine pencil applied to local governments. I'm not sure that taxpayers paid a ton of attention because the asset value of their home as their property taxes was going up felt really good in terms of their own net worth statements, and the services felt good and the goodies felt good and the new hockey rinks and the new parks and all the stuff we're building out in our local communities all seemed really good, and now it's time to tighten down. And I think that if we put our minds to it in terms of reform, and I think Representative Emmer actually has a bill out there right now that would utilize a kind of a county distribution mechanism with local units of government maybe having to apply on a need basis for local aids and credits. I'll bet we could achieve a result like we're doing on GAMC, politically painful, but maybe the right solution, where we get to something where we're spending half or a fourth of what we were before, probably in the end for taxpayers getting more value. So I'm going to support the governor's more aggressive posture here and suggest that we should be trying to do more in this bill here. And I'm a little nervous about what I might see in K-12 and some of the other bills coming out of the legislature here under the targets that I don't have a lot of information on. So I'm not totally comfortable saying we can give the local units of government as much of a pass as we're doing here, not knowing where else we might have to take cuts. So thank you for the chance.
Yes, thank you. And Representative Carlson can provide you with the targets for all the committees if you're interested in that. So if you want to see them or Representative to the minority leads. And I was just remembering, is it Representative Holberg and Garofalo? Or who are the leads?
Representative,
so you can see the okay.
Just got it.
Okay.
Real time.
Okay. That's Representative right. Hillstrom, then Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to make a comment about some of the comments about the growth in the 90s and the things that the local units of government have been doing. I happen to represent a community who has not been growing in parks and growing in hockey rinks and growing in other areas. We have been beating back crime statistics, frankly. Our mayor just recently told us that we have about $200,000 of flexibility in our budget, and the rest are things like police and fire and you know, water, sewer, streets, plowing, kind of your basic core services. And each and every time local government aid is cut to my community, it directly results in cuts in real services that my community needs. I served on the city council, and when I was on the city council, for every $100,000 we needed to raise or cut, that equaled a 1% cut or increase in property taxes. So when the governor proposes to cut $1.6 or $1.9 million, that directly would result in a 19% increase in property taxes in my community. We can't afford that. I think this plan is much more appropriate and will not result in as many layoffs. For the first time, Brooklyn Center, in 4 years, Brooklyn Center has realized a reduction in crime. First time. And so these cuts will mean layoffs to police officers, layoffs to firefighters, less plowing going on in my community. And I don't think we can afford that either.
Okay, Representative Marquardt, then Zellers.
Oh, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I've got to defend the cities and the counties just a little bit here. Because, Representative Downey, if you look at the data provided by the information that cities and counties have to send into the state auditor every year, and put that on a constant dollar amount, you know, with inflation and so forth, and you look at the charts, and I can provide those to you, but you will look at the spending and the aid have actually gone down for cities and counties, while property taxes have gone up. And so, I mean, it's easy to make the statements that you're making that this spending's gone wild and so forth, but the data does not support that. And since 2003, cities alone have been cut over $1 billion of local government aid from their 2003 base levels. And, you know, because some cities don't receive LGA does not mean you do not receive property tax reduction aid. For example, 70% of property tax refund program goes to the metro area, 70%. And much of it to your area, Representative Downey. And property tax refund program and local government aid works in tandem in that the property tax refund program helps those homeowners who have high property taxes in relationship to their income. Local government aid equalizes communities so that if you've got a community with a lower tax base, that helps that community. It helps businesses in those communities getting local government aid for keeping property taxes down. Representative Dietrich, and I know Representative Downey, you serve on the Small Business Caucus. The number one concern, and I looked at the poll that you had there, the survey, the number one concern for small businesses as far as taxes, 40% said property taxes. Local government aid keeps property taxes down for businesses in those cities. And so they work in tandem. You know, 65% of LGA goes to rural Minnesota. But LGA equalizes communities, the PTR program equalizes individual homeowners, and they work in tandem. So if you're going to pull one out of the system, it really messes things up. It really does. And so I just caution members who come from areas that do not receive local government aid that in fact you're receiving, your citizens are receiving a lot of aid that keeps those citizens in your community. For example, the VOSS database came out this year. And let's look at Southwest Hennepin County. 77% of the homeowners before the PTR program have a 5% or higher burden of property taxes versus their income. After the PTR, now this is people 10 to 45,000 income, goes down to 48%. Now, you look in rural Minnesota, those numbers are much lighter. So I'm just saying let's be very careful here when we talk, because when I look at the overall property tax aids and credits, different things help different folks. But they all work together. And if you pull one out, and you know, I'm a rural guy. And I think of all of these programs, PTR is number one in my book. I'm an LGA guy, but I'm saying PTR is number one in my book. 70% goes to the metro area, but if you were to pull LGA out, it hurts. It just hurts the whole thing. If you were, so that's my caution, Madam Chair, is that when you look at it overall, it's all these programs kind of interweave, and they all make a stronger Minnesota overall, which is really important.
Thank you. We have Representative Zellers on the list, so I'm kind of hoping that's, you know, the minority leader wrap up.
No, Madam Chair, just always last. So, no, Madam Chair, I will be, if I'm the last one, then I will be quick. Representative Dabney, I just wanted you to remember that those two teddy bears were also over in the other body, and I'm with you. I kind of like to forget about the Senate sometimes, too, but that teddy bear Roger Moe and the little squishy kitten named Larry Pogemiller were also a part of the situation when it comes to...
You better not be talking about disparaging remarks.
No, I would never calling him cute and cuddly.
Oh, teddy bear. Jeez.
Those folks were over in the Senate, and they were a part of the negotiations, and some would say maybe on a bipartisan basis, dominated the House in the negotiations, even though we tried. You all have tried, but they maybe have gotten their way. And there was that one tiny little blip in there in 2006 where we did produce. I say that as a body, but also a bipartisan body, we produced a $2 billion budget surplus. And when I got here, that we were four and a half in the hole in 2002, 2003. And for that, I blame Jesse because he's not here. None of his people are here. But we came into a mess. We helped correct the mess. We're back where we are, and I wouldn't say it's just one party's fault or one ideology or ideology. I'm hoping you weren't trying to call us idiots, but it sounded a little too close for a farm. Sounded too close for a farm kid. So maybe I've been called that too many times. But there was a concerted effort, I would say, on both sides to make sure that that surplus wasn't spent on one-time dollars. Unfortunately, it was. We didn't put it towards reserve. We didn't buy back some things. We did buy back some of the education shifts and some of the accounting gimmicks that, on a bipartisan basis, were approved by the House and the Senate. But to say that it was one party or ideology's fault, or we've tried that, I guess I would then maybe say we've tried the other with our new president in crop dusting the entire country with economic stimulus money printed in the basement of the White House. And unemployment that was never, ever, ever supposed to go above 8% per the economic advisors the president hired went north of 10. So I think before we disparage a party or an ideology or a group, I think that we're all in this together to try to find a good solution. We want to maintain the services, but we also have a lot of folks around here that are, you know, a little bit grayer in the hair than we are, and they're starting to retire. We're going to face an even bigger problem once the baby boomers are gone. So if we don't start now, it's going to be even worse later on down the road. And I just, again, I wouldn't want you to forget about those two cuddly little teddy bears over there in the Senate that we're here and we're part of the negotiations all along.
Okay, further discussion? I think if not, we're going to get ready to vote. I just want to, before we vote, I do want to say that, you know, I want to underline again, this is not a happy day. This is not something people generally want to do. I have heard some folks say they wish we were cutting more, and I look forward to seeing those bills. But what I want to say for the committee, you know, here's some folks in this room, and if I've left anyone out, correct me, but we have a lot of locally elected officials sitting around this table here. And so for those, people understand how difficult this is. And these are the members, Representative Reinert, Lincheski, Representative Hillstrom, Lanning, Dietrich, Marquardt, Tilbury, Demmer, Davids, and Broad. Now, if I've left someone out, and Representative Solberg, all of these people have put together local budgets for school districts, counties, and cities. And it is true that the legislature does decide the policy for these folks. We absolutely cannot deny that our actions are affecting what they're doing. And this committee, I would argue this committee has a higher percentage of formerly locally elected officials who have to take the votes, set the levies, take the heat, hold the truth in taxation committees, and then we bind them with mandates, other issues they're trying to get around in a very complicated system. So I think it's a strength this committee shares together. We understand what these people are going to go through. And it's hard for me to imagine anyone feels joyful about this. This is something bipartisanly most of us have experienced. And I think it's just not fair to not say that this bill isn't going to make things more difficult for folks out there. It is also the case that it's about, the governor's cut is about 2.5 times as big. This is significantly less difficult for what the cities and counties are going to have to absorb in this bill. I do want to also say that some folks have thought maybe we ought to look at cutting things like ETR. And the current majority has, in fact, in the 08 bill, which I think 129 members voted for, I think it was the, you know, if we go back to just 2 years ago, we increased the PTR. This is the part of the tax system that is most based on the ability to pay in the whole tax system. And I'm proud that we didn't cut the circuit breaker in our proposal, and I'm proud that we didn't cut the renter's credit in our proposal, because these are the things that help people directly. I'm also proud that at least in 2010, we are not going to raise any homeowners' property taxes. Yes, the cities and counties have to absorb the decision we make here now, but there will not be a property tax increase on a homeowner in 2010 as a result of this vote here now. We also have got the bill about 50-50 metro outstate, which is one difficult thing to do, as folks know. So it's easy, I think, to take apart the pieces that people don't like, but really the part people don't like, I think, overall is just cutting in general. With the assignment to cut 105, I think this bill does it in a very fair, solid, straightforward way that people can understand. And so, you know, members, I hope we will get the Senate to get as close to us as we can. We're feeling pretty good that the Senate is about here, too, and we'll learn a little more as they actually release their language. But not a pleasant experience, but we're prepared to vote tonight. Unless there's any other discussion, I think we're just going to call for the vote. If not, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor on House File 2077 as amended to go on to Ways and Means. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The amendment pass, or the bill passes, and it's off to Ways and Means. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.